And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How the hell are you?
You're quite chipper this Sunday, unlike other Sundays. What's going on with you, man?
Oh, man, I couldn't sleep. I was so excited. I got up early the next morning, drinking coffee, looking at Twitter. It's just been a great day, Mike.
Yeah, of course, we got to give you credit. We'll talk about the Tennessee-Auburn game in just a moment. But before we get into all that, you know, I got to say, I don't think I saw a single person pick Tennessee to win this game outright. I'm not sure you were the only one to do it, but you did do it. You know, congrats to you. This was one I definitely didn't see coming.
Oh, I love it. I love it, Mike. Well, trust me, there's plenty of wrong picks too. So every now and then, blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then.
I'm sure there's blind nuts happening too.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
All right, Shane, but let's jump into the big game from the weekend, of course, Georgia-LSU. LSU comes up with a huge win at home. They were an underdogs to Georgia, and they just beat the hell out of them, 36-16. What was your main takeaway from this game?
Well, for the one I got right with Tennessee-Auburn, I got this one really wrong. And I apologize, Georgia fans. Maybe it's my fault because I put my negative mojo on them, but I don't know, man. It just seems like Georgia couldn't get their shit together. And LSU, I think we got to start considering Joe Burrow one of the best quarterbacks in this league.
Yeah, and I mean, he was getting so much heat. You know, I think it was Jordan Rodgers. You know, there's a guy that I've kind of been – I'm not exactly a big fan of his, but he had him at 14 out of 14 in his SEC quarterback ranks after LSU lost to Florida. I mean, I don't know where in the hell these people come up with these things, but if you watch Joe Burrow, you know, obviously he didn't win them that Florida game, but in my estimation, he did not cause them to lose. I mean, they couldn't protect his ass.
It just, I mean, if we go to the other side of the ball, it just seems like Georgia came out just pounding them with that 1-2 combo with Swift and Holyfield. And they just kind of got away with it and just relied way too much on Fromm, it felt like.
Yeah, and this was not the day to rely on Jake Fromm. He was, you know, his numbers don't look like terrible when you look at the final numbers, 16 of 34 for 209, one touchdown and two interceptions. But at one point in this game, I believe he was 5 for 20. I mean, he was just god-awful. Fans are calling for Justin Fields already. And what's remarkable about people calling for Justin Fields, you know, obviously you and I are not there at practice. We don't know what they look like there. But I don't believe the Georgia staff has any faith in Fields to throw the ball. He's not throwing the ball in this damn game. They bring him in for one play at a time, and it's kind of obvious that they're going to run the ball. It's the same thing they did against Tennessee. And, you know, this Georgia offense is in a funk. They put up some decent numbers there in the end, kind of in junk time, but they were shut out in the first half. LSU really, really exposed Georgia's defense a little bit here. 200 yards passing, 275 rushing. And this is kind of what I expected for LSU coming off that loss to Florida. Backs against the wall. This is a must-win game. And this puts LSU right back in contention for the SEC and the playoff.
Yeah, man, it absolutely does. I mean, they're in the captain's seat right now. If they can win out, they're in it.
Now let's go, speaking of that, let's go to Ed Orgeron's comments. You know, he didn't have a whole lot of, insightful things here to say after the game, but I thought this line about just basically keeping the Tigers in playoff contention, I mean, he's got this team believing in big things now.
You know, we have a lot of recruits here. A lot of guys here. Georgia's always in the national picture. We're an up-and-coming football team. We still got a long ways to go, but we want to lead LSU to a championship. Where this takes us, we don't know, but hopefully it gives us some confidence that we can play with anybody in the country. We cannot look past what we got up next is Mississippi State. Listen, let me tell you something. We can control. We play well and do the things we can. We can be in there with most teams in the country.
All right, Chase, so thoughts on that? Ed Orgeron's got his boys believing.
Dude, I'm telling you. Coach O is getting everything he wants. He walks in a gas station. He wants a candy bar. They're saying, you know what, Coach O, don't worry about it. We got you. Because it just feels like, I mean, he's had everything on his back from the moment he took this job. And now, man, this fan base, this entire state's really bought into what he's bringing and putting on the field. And how can you not? I mean, you're talking 3 top 10 victories this year. So, I mean, LSU's legit, man.
Yeah, and the players, you know, not only have they bought into what Ed Orgeron is selling, they've really bought into the man, and just, I think they've obviously heard all the criticisms around Coach O being on the hottest seat in the SEC all damn offseason, even though he's basically this is his second year full-time on the job. So I thought these comments from Foster Monroe, that, you know, they're tight end there, who, of course, he wears number 18 for LSU. That's their jersey they give out to their team leader every year. He really just kind of went out on a limb and just really put people on blast for calling out Ed Orgeron all this time. And, you know, while his Tigers just keep racking up wins after wins. So here's Monroe after this game.
I mean, you know, as a tactician, as a leader, and what you see as a player and what the national folks are not seeing about him.
That, what you think, what is the job of a head coach? You got to think about that. You know, we have incredibly high paid, incredibly tactile coordinators who do an incredible job and create incredible game plans and have us always ready to play. So, I mean, what room does that kind of leave for the head coach? He's got to make sure every Saturday that we are ready mentally, physically, emotionally ready to play. And he has done that. Every Saturday that I've been around him. Every time. I mean, it might be a different thing. It might be a different wrinkle. He might cut practice by 5 minutes. But he's got an incredible game plan. And he knows what he's doing. And people just, they hear his accent and they just think, oh, I mean, this guy is just all rah-rah. He just gets people pumped up and ready to go on Saturdays. But the lengths that he goes to make sure that we're ready to play on Saturday, it's astounding. I mean, you wouldn't believe how hard this coaching staff worked if I told you.
Dude, I mean, you could just feel the conviction in there. And this is something we've talked about, and they've kind of created this with the – it all started back at the beginning of the season with the players-only meeting. You could just feel like this team like the games meant more to them. I'm not saying it didn't mean more to other people in the SEC, but I don't know. They come out so emotional. And this is what they're talking about after the game, that they're doing this for Coach O. They're doing this for the state of Louisiana. I mean, they're just – these players down there are just playing for more, it feels like.
All right, Shane, then on the flip side of the ball, Kirby Smart, you know, he tried to pull a damn rabbit out of his ass here, pulled a Les Miles-type play, fake field goal. You know, and he was quick to note that they got what they saw on film. That's why they ran it. So, I give him credit for that, but this play just made no sense to me. I think it was a 4th and 9, 4th and 10. They're running the damn, you know, throw the ball over the holder's head and hope the kicker catches it and runs for it. And it got snuffed out by LSU. But I thought Georgia, this was at this point in the game, Georgia had the momentum. And I just don't understand being on the road when you have the momentum, why you need a damn trick play. I think you need it the other way around. You know, if you're at home and the other team's got the momentum, you try to do tricks like this. Not this way, because this just got the LSU crowd even more into it, and it kind of steamrolled on Georgia after this. So here's Kirby Smart on that decision, and then we can discuss it.
Coach, fake field goals are brilliant when they work.
That's right.
Can you just talk about what went into the decision to go for it there, and how do you think it affected the game?
I don't know. You know, we had some good offensive possessions there leading up to it. I thought we were moving the ball good. I felt like at that time we were going to be able to move the ball. We wanted to be aggressive. We came in here and talked to the staff. They were like 15 to 17 with a look that it would work on, and it was a look that we wanted. I mean, we thought it was going to be perfect. They had one guy out there. We were going to block him. One of their guys ended up not rushing. He rushed every other time, and he fell into the play and made it. So, like you said, if it doesn't work, it was a bad call. I'm the first to admit that. But we certainly felt good about it. We thought it was there. Thought it would be a big momentum play for us. It didn't. But, I mean, I didn't think that was the end of the momentum. It's just that hurt us at the time, certainly.
All right, Shane, and we got a lot of respect for Hot Rod on this podcast, but I don't know how much respect we got for him to pick up a 4th and 10 against some of LSU's better defenders.
No, stick to kicking and rapping, brother, because running is not for you. Oh, man, I saw this, and, you know, I'm a fan of trick plays. Some people hate them, but I like them. I mean, just doing something different, just mixing things up. But I think there's a time and a place for it, and maybe this wasn't it. But then again, let's just say that guy wasn't blocked into, you know, the running lane of Blankenship. Then we're talking maybe some points off this thing, and maybe that was the spark that they needed, because that's what Coach was looking for. The problem, I think, with looking for a spark from Georgia is you know, with Fields, man. I mean, you got this kid. Mm-hmm. They every time he comes in, they're expecting him to run because that's what he does every time. He doesn't throw the ball. And he does it again. They bring him in like 3 or 4 plays, and it just feels like, okay, you might as well be running Wildcat.
Well, that's what he is at this point. He is Wildcat because they don't – like you said, they bring him in, but it's basically for one play, you know. And when they do bring him in, it seems like Holyfield and Swift run harder because the defense is – you know, they don't know who in the hell has the ball. So I don't know. It's just Jake. It was not Jake Fromm's day. And I'm not certain that Justin Fields would have just kind of come out there and whooped ass. I mean, he's never done it on the college level to against a really good defense. So we don't know. But just, I don't know, leaving Jake Fromm to win the day, when particularly when Georgia's running game was working in this game, why they felt the need to pass it so many damn times, I will never know. But that's something that's, you know, sometimes Jim Chaney, I think, kind of outsmarts himself. And 34 throwing attempts, 30 rushing attempts on the day. This is a case of, well, and only 24 rushing attempts when you take out Jake Fromm's, you know, getting hit and everything. So I think this is a classic example of old Chaney outthinking himself here.
Yeah, I mean, you got Swift averaging 6 yards a carry, Holyfield averaging 8. And yet we want to rely on Fromm's arm. Not that he's I don't think he's a bad quarterback by no means. And I don't think, like you said, I don't think Fields was the answer. But, you know, it seems like you were kind of setting this up, you know, with Tennessee and these other games they've had in the past. You put Fields in there. Defense automatically thinks it's going to be a run or run option type deal. And it seems like this would have been the perfect opportunity for him to just launch one. But they didn't. They didn't do it. They brought him in and did exactly what they did on film last week. So, I mean, no surprise there.
So where does Georgia go from here, Shane? I mean, I've seen some Georgia fans are kind of hitting the panic button. I don't think it's quite time for that. I mean, they were number 2 in the nation. They're still in the top 10. They just lost on the road. Everything's in front of them. What are your thoughts on Georgia's and their outlook? And I mean, I know their margin for error is gone now, but
yeah,
by no means should this team, I think, be thinking the season's over by any stretch. Do you?
No. I mean, LSU will be a top 5, top 3 team this week. Has the rankings come out yet?
Yeah, we probably should have went on that too, but so LSU's in the top 5, and Georgia, I believe, is 6 in one poll and 7 in the other.
Okay, so they still control the dynasty. Top 4 teams get in. So, yes, I think this may be the wake-up call that Georgia needed. They still have the keys to the East. If they put away Florida, they put away Kentucky, then, you know, and they get the SEC championship, they have just as good as an opportunity to get into the playoffs as LSU does right now. So I wouldn't be hanging my head too low. I mean, it's not like Georgia lost to South Carolina and now they need South Carolina to lose 2 games or something like that. They still control their destiny, and maybe an ass kicking is what they needed to fire these boys up and get them back on track.
Yeah, definitely not time to hit the panic button, but it is something that we've kind of necessarily say seen coming, although I did pick them to lose. But they were not great in that Tennessee game. They were not great in that Missouri game. So the cracks were in the armor, so to speak, and now it just fully got exposed this week. Okay, Shane, so next game, of course, I don't know how we got this long without discussing it. I figured you'd be screaming about it already. But Tennessee goes on the road to Auburn. Huge underdog here. Comes away with a 30-24 win. First time Tennessee's won an SEC West game in, I don't know what it was. I put it on Twitter. I think it's like 2,100 days, something insane. So immediate thoughts coming off this one.
Oh, Mike, I tell you, man, this is a long time waiting. I think it was okay. So the last time we beat an SEC opponent was in 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
November. So it's close to 700 days, and you know, we came off that horrible year last year. This year, you know, it just felt like we were getting there, like we had a shot with Florida. We really didn't, and then here came Auburn with all this bad news stuff, and then I've convinced myself that we have a shot to beat Auburn, and then to actually see it happen, golly, Mike, I tell you what, this is why I love college football. I'd hate to be an Auburn fan right now, because I know exactly how they feel, because for the last 2 years, you know, like I said, we haven't won an SEC game, and Auburn's not that bad yet, but you know they got to be upset this morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this should make them even more upset. I looked this up. Gus Malzahn's buyout is currently $32 million.
Jeez.
So the stat I was referencing there, I should have came a little bit more prepared, but Tennessee had not beaten an SEC West opponent in 2,891 days, which came all the way back in 2010 against Ole Miss. So, you know, Tennessee exercised a lot of demons with this. You know, they're no longer the joke of the SEC. I think that's been inherited by Auburn at the moment. Jeremy Pruitt gets his first SEC win. There's a ton of momentum here. I mean, this was something, you know, I was mocking some people earlier this on Sunday, because here at work they asked us to write a column about, will Tennessee even win a damn SEC game this year after that Florida game? I mean, that was the narrative, and every single person said no except for me. I said they'd win at least two based on what I had seen and what I knew. So I don't know. This is kind of could be a program defining win for Tennessee, don't you think?
Absolutely, dude. And I mean, Garantano looked great, looked efficient, had over 300 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, looked good. Chandler was finally healthy. Him and Jordan looked decent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that we established a running game, but there were some moments where we looked really good on that front. And then on the flip side of the ball, they look good on defense. They kept Auburn in check, and you know, Auburn has been struggling a little bit, but I'm confused. Like, if I'm an Auburn fan, that Schwartz kid should have been getting the ball 50 times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because every time he touched the ball, it seemed like something bad happened against Tennessee, and they just didn't want to give it to him for some reason.
Yeah, he's the fastest guy in college football, a lot of people say. I think he runs the 100 meters in like 10.1 or something insane like that. So he came in with he had a 76-yard reception, I want to say. It was almost like Tennessee was unaware that he was fast. They took all the terrible angles, as you can imagine. But, well, and one thing, Shane, that really aided Garantano there was the move to Tyson Helton came down from the press box. You didn't talk about this, did you?
No, I didn't, brother.
Well, Tyson Helton had been calling all the plays from the press box all year long, and that's something that Jeremy Pruitt noted in his post-game presser. Just, you know, the fact that he really wanted his offensive coordinator to be able to look Garantano in the eyes and just help to make plays down there. And, you know, Pruitt noted that basically in his career, he's always called his defensive plays from the box. He understands that's the easiest way to do it. You can obviously see the field a lot better, but he really believed that, you know, something needed to be changed here with Tennessee's offense, and it obviously paid off for the Vols.
Yeah, I do. But then again, there was sometimes you're looking at this first and 10 and you're like, here we go. We're just going to waste it down by running to the left or the right and getting a yard. And that's what they did every night. Every time. It just felt like maybe if he was down there, Pruitt could have just walked over and said, hey, listen, let's mix up first down a little bit. Or he's maybe saving like the world's greatest play action pass ever. And we'll probably see it next week against Alabama.
Well, one thing, you know, we talk about this win being so big for Tennessee. Pruitt, you know, he didn't go that far, but he was asked about basically Tennessee fans questioning whether the Vols could compete against a top-tier program like Auburn. I think Jeremy Pruitt kind of took offense to that, and that was kind of evident to me by his answer here.
Well, you know, other night on Vol calls, you know, I had somebody call and ask me about, you know, how do we compete against the top-tier programs in the country? You know, and my answer is we are a top-tier program in the country. We just got to create a top-tier team. You know what I'm saying? And our guys are working hard to do that. The program's here, okay? It's our job to create the right team, and we will do it with the men in this locker room and the guys that we're going to recruit.
All right, Shane, so Pruitt has got a ton of faith in his university. He's just got to build the right team to actually get it done. Is this something you like to hear from your coach?
Dude, that's the best thing I heard all night, man. When he came out and said that, it just that, I mean, for so long we've been the laughing stock of the SEC. And, you know, we finally get our first SEC victory in 2 years, and it just feels like things are going in the right direction for once. And, like, with Butch Jones, there were some moments where we were competitive, but it just didn't feel like it was, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like it was legit. Like it was superficial. Like we moved pieces around to make this one work or make that work. You know, it just feels like we're building it the right way. And I don't want to make reference to Butch Jones or anything, but when he, you know, creating that foundation, it feels like that's what Pruitt's doing. And he's establishing Tennessee as a legit contender in the SEC. And when he comes out after a victory like this and he doesn't soak it in like most coaches would. He's not crying on the sideline, you know. He's coming out saying we need to be better. And I don't know. It feels good when your coach is saying that and knowing that better days are ahead for the University of Tennessee.
Well, speaking of better days ahead here, let's flip to the other side of this. Gus Malzahn left searching for answers. He said he's sounds like a broken record. He said that about 3 weeks ago, and it's basically the same thing here. So, you know, where does Auburn go from here, Shane, with under Gus Malzahn? They're locked into this huge deal, and, I mean, they're losing to a team that, you know, a few weeks ago, as I noted, people were writing off as headed to another 0-8 SEC season.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I really don't know about this one because not only are the players – it feels like the fans – can't stand him, but the players feel a little bit, you know, like they can't believe it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, man. It just feels like the wheels have really ran off this university.
So here's Gus Malzahn after the game. You know, he's, of course, he's facing these questions, basically, what in the hell are we going to do to fix this? And, you know, no one's asked him yet, why is he getting paid $50 million? That'll probably come in a couple weeks after they lose to Georgia and Alabama. But I mean, basically short of that, he was getting thrown all the kinds of questions, and he didn't really have any answers in his post-game presser.
You know, right now, I mean, my feelings are I'm disappointed for our team and everything. I'm not ready to sit here and make any kind of talk about staff or players other than I'm disappointed. We're going to watch the film. And we're going to get this thing corrected. And that's my responsibility as a head coach. And, you know, whatever it takes to get us corrected and to finish this thing the right way, I'm going to do.
What's going on?
Well, we're going to have to stick together in that locker room, and we're going to have to fix it. And like I said, that's my job, and we got to get better, and we got to – you know, you can't keep doing the same thing every week and then two weeks in a row. You know, we've turned the football over. We didn't make the plays when we had to. So – we got to rally. We got to finish this thing the right way.
All right, Shane. If Gus Malzahn sounded like a broken record before, now he sounds like Now he just sounds like a depressed alcoholic or something here. He just got no answers for anything here.
No, it's just it's like, well, we got to change here. We got to build and get better. But it's the exact same. It's the same shit, man. It's the same stuff he's putting on the field time and time again. Was I happy? Yes, I'm a Vol fan. But look at their schedule. And let me ask you, Mike, looking at this schedule, do you see, other than the Liberty Flames, these next four games, do you see them winning? I mean, do you see them beating Ole Miss Rebels right now, 5-2 Ole Miss Rebels?
I mean, that's like a toss-up to me. It could go either way, but I could certainly see them losing.
But the closest one, because it don't get easier after that. Then they got Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Then they got the Georgia Bulldogs. Then they got Liberty, and then they got Alabama. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you what, man, there's a real potential of losing four more games here. And if Gus Malzahn comes out of this conference 4-4, what would that put him at? 5-7, something like that?
Yeah, 4-8 potentially.
Golly, I think you're going to have to get some of these boosters together and get this man fired, because this is not going in the right direction. Next thing you know, they're going to start losing recruits. I've been on this bus, Mike. I know how this ride ends. It ain't pretty, so Auburn better do something before it's too late.
Well, with that $32 million, though, I just don't know how they can do it unless they've got some money saved up here. They spend the entire SEC network check on just getting Gus Malzahn out of there. But, you know, they're stuck in a tough place, and, you know, he can thank his agent, Jimmy Sexton, for hooking up that one, because – this is the same roller coaster of Gus Malzahn every year. You know, when they're hyped up, they fall flat. When no one sees them coming, they do big. So maybe next year when they lose everybody, maybe they'll win the national championship.
You never know, brother.
And one of the best comments from the day came from their middle linebacker. You got to feel bad for the players here, but Deshaun Davis, you know, he was asked if he could imagine being 4-3 after all this preseason hype, and he had one of the best responses of the day.
This is a complete shocker. If I was a betting man and you would have told me to put everything I ever own that we would be 4-3 in week 7, I'd be naked under a bridge somewhere. Like, completely.
All right, Shane, if you were driving down the road and you saw Deshaun Davis butt-ass naked under a bridge, would you give him your Tennessee blanket to cover up, or what?
I don't know. I'd probably keep driving, man. That's a big boy.
Well, that was a great lie, though, wasn't it? I mean, at least he's got a sense of humor about it still.
Yeah, I mean, what else can you do right now? I mean, all they can do is just upset people in their conference, and I don't know, maybe buy in. Do they really love Gus? Do they want to see Gus stick around? You know, maybe this is something that they say, hey, listen, our coach is under attack. We got to straighten up. We got to buckle down and get this thing rolling again. But I don't know, brother. I read that schedule. The games they lost ain't even the toughest teams they played this year, except for LSU, of course.
Right. All right, Chase. So let's go, staying in the state of Alabama, to Alabama, Tuscaloosa, where Alabama, you know, of course, they just keep rolling on. They beat the hell out of Missouri 39-10. Covered that spread by a half a point here, thank God. But, you know, that was a real nail-biter. Any thoughts from this one?
Closer than I thought it was, man. I mean, I was watching it, and Missouri kind of stuck around there for a little bit and did some, I thought, some great plays. But, you know, obviously the talent eventually came through, and they took away. At first, when they first started, I'm looking at this thing at 7-0. You know, two plays they scored in 23 seconds, and then the second time they have the ball, four plays, they're right back down there. But they ended up going away with a field goal. So, like, I thought at that moment this game was over. But credits to Locke, man, he actually looked pretty good against Alabama.
Yeah, he did. He did all right. You know, I thought he did about, you know, he ended his non-touchdown streak, so you got to give him credit for that. But, you know, obviously the big story from this one, Tua, he came up hurt. This was something that kind of snuck up on me during the week, but I didn't really realize he had an issue with his knee. Saban said, you know, he hurt it in practice, but it was a minor injury, and he was going to play, and he did, and you know, the play he got hurt on, it didn't look like much of anything. It was him running in the open field and just slid down. And then it turned into Tank Gate, Shane. I don't know if you were in on that Tank Gate, but you know, he was down for quite a while. He did jog off the field, went right into that tent. Why I mentioned that, and just everybody in the damn world was staring at this Alabama sideline tent because they wanted to see what was going on. And Tua did not go back in the game. He says, Nick Saban says Tua would have went back in the game had he allowed him. He said he was able to go, mm-hmm. said he wanted to go, but they let Jalen Hurts finish out the game here.
We did get some guys nicked up. Tua could have went back in the game. He wanted to go back in the game. I didn't think it was worth putting him back in the game. You know, sort of tweaked his knee a little bit, the same one he sort of tweaked last week. So, you know, we don't think there's any issues or problems with it.
I don't want to put a whole lot of credit to these because I don't know if they're – I think these are false rumors, but I have seen a number of rumors out there saying that Tua – had his knee scoped today, so just throwing that out there. I don't. That's not been reported by anyone yet, so don't quote me on that. But how big of a, let's say Tua can't go against this Tennessee team at Tennessee, how big would that be for Alabama moving forward?
Did you say upset, Mike? No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to get too carried away. I hate that for him. And I think that if Saban's smart, if this, I don't know, if they did scope this thing, just saying, maybe they want to do that before they start getting in some of these tougher games. Mm-hmm. Not that Tennessee's not. I think Tennessee will be a pretty good challenge for them. But I don't think it's going to be a ball game. You know, I don't think this is something that Nick Saban's losing any sleep over.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of curious. Maybe even keep him out. Maybe, obviously, this thing gave him a hard time last week, and then here we are rolling into week two with the same situation. The last thing you need probably is Tua out there. So, I don't know. A lot of excited Vol fans hoping that he takes the week off. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, because, of course, Tennessee – They go to Tennessee this week, but then they get the bye week before going to LSU. So I think a lot of people are kind of agreeing with what you're saying there. Even if Tua, you know, hopefully he's not had this injury. I hope he doesn't. He's outstanding to watch, and he's definitely the Heisman front runner. But if he is limited, hell, I think, you know, not to say that I would ever pick this, but if Alabama were to lose to Tennessee, I think they'd still be damn fine for the playoff. Because if they went out, they'd win the West. They'd have a chance to win the SEC. If they win the SEC, I think they go to the playoffs. So, you know, it's sad to say they may not even need this win. If he's at all limited, I think, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think you got to rest him, letting him know that the bye week's upcoming, because that trip to LSU looks more and more daunting as the weeks go on.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. I think you sit him this week, regardless, scope or not. Get him some rest, because obviously this thing's going to keep carrying over until he rested. They got the bye week coming up. And like I said, it's not like they don't have a reliable backup. You got freaking Jalen that hung 40 on us last year. So I think they'll be fine going into Tennessee. I don't think they're really worried about losing that game, even though Tennessee has – I mean, obviously they do look better. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, you got – it's freaking Alabama. They're loaded and – and let's just ride with what you got, and don't go into this game and screw something up that may cost you a playoff later. Because without Tua, that may not affect you against Tennessee, but it may affect you against LSU. You know what I'm saying?
I think what you're trying to say is Alabama should just take it easy on the balls.
Yeah, I was thinking too. If any of those running backs are hurt, maybe they should bench them too. You know, any of the Harris boys, just leave them in Alabama. Just get them some rest. Take two bye, and like you said, they could lose next week, and they'll be all right for LSU game. Has Alabama got any more Harris running backs? I swear, every time I look up, or Harris, I thought he had 1,000 yards rushing. I realized they had two of them down there.
They got a lot of them, I'll just say that.
Oh, jeez.
Okay, Shane, jumping to Columbia. Heartbreaker here for the Gamecocks. South Carolina goes on the road, wins 26-23. And this was an interesting game here because the Aggies shut out the Gamecocks in the first half. It was 13-0 at halftime. And then South Carolina came just raging back in the second half and damn near won this thing, but the Aggies escaped with the win. Thoughts on this game?
Yeah, a little disappointed. I thought South Carolina was going to get this one, man, and I don't know. It just seems like they couldn't get it going. A lot like Georgia. They were really sluggish during this game and until it mattered. And then when it got to the end, it's like, oh, God, there's your offense. And it's like, why haven't you been showing us that for the other three quarters?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to expand too much on this, but, you know, this is all we heard about in the offseason is these guys are going to get vertical. We're going to, if it's a one-on-one matchup, we're going to launch it to them. It's going to be a fast-paced offense. And it's like, you don't see it until the game is over. And it's like you could have been running this the whole time and had Texas A&M on their heels, but you decided not to and be more conservative than you should have. This is my two cents. Of course, like I said, I thought South Carolina would get this one.
You know what's interesting, Shane, because we obviously talked a lot at length this offseason about Brian McClendon, the offensive coordinator who, you know, was elevated. He was the receivers coach previously. And that's the unit that was supposed to be, you know, outside of Jake Bentley, was supposed to be the strength of the South Carolina offense.
Mm-hmm.
And these damn receivers can't catch a pass. I mean, I think they had 8 drops in this game, many of them at critical situations. Even had crazy South Carolina fans questioning whether these damn receivers are dropping the ball because they want Skarnecchia in there and not Jake Bentley. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten at South Carolina right now. Fans are booing Jake Bentley. He did have a really bad red zone interception, a ball he should have never thrown. That was a killer in the first half. But like I said, he bounced back, had 3 touchdowns in this one. So he's not the reason they lost this game. But I think it was kind of interesting that we both overlooked the receivers coach being elevated and how that would affect the receiving core. Because these guys, even Deebo Samuel, who he's still solid, but he's going from a guy that we legitimately thought could be like a Heisman contender. Now he's just like a solid SEC receiver. I mean, that whole unit's taking a step back. While on the flip side, you got Kellen Mond, 353 yards. A&M had 2 receivers that racked up nearly 300 yards receiving on 16 catches here. I don't know. I just continue to get impressed with Jimbo's squad here. And what were your thoughts on South Carolina fans booing old Jake Bentley?
Well, before we go over there, about the Mond thing, I think this was Muschamp really just selling out the run. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was as scared of Mond as he was Williams. And you can notice they had that box loaded up, and that's why those receivers just took off. I mean, they had 2 receivers over 100 yards receiving, and Mond looked really good. Now, on the flip side of the coin, to put the blame on Bentley is crazy talk, because Bentley did have a pretty good game. Was it his greatest? Of course not. But everybody remembers last week. I mean, that last week's victory is still fresh. They're thinking about Mike. They're thinking about, we got to change something, you know. Mm-hmm. When what they probably should change is how they approach these games and maybe get these receivers a little bit more involved with I don't know. I just – the offense ain't doing it. The defense ain't doing it. You talk about just – I'd be upset if I was a South Carolina fan, because I truly believe they've dropped 2 games in a row here. I think 2 games in a row are on the coaches.
Yeah, and I think you can hear that frustration from Will Muschamp in his post-game presser. Here's the South Carolina coach just on the tough loss and putting that on him and the fans, you know, booing Jake Bentley. I thought this was kind of the most interesting part of this.
He's a battler. You know, he's a competitor. And he competes in front of 80,000 people. And that position's going to get criticized, just like my position. That's part of it. And he understands it as much as anyone in the room, and so do I. So that's part of it. And he battled his ass off and put us in the situation to win the football game.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, Muschamp's dead on here. You have, the fans are going to put it on the quarterback. They're going to put it on the coach. And that's just kind of the way it is. Thoughts on what Muschamp had to say there?
I agree. I mean, I hate when players get booed, and sometimes, a lot of times, when you hear the boos, it's not so much at the player, it's just the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, South Carolina looked rough, brother. That at half, this thing was 13-0. They weren't doing anything, and it kind of got that crowd out of it. And that's one thing South Carolina is known for, is just, you know, the fan support. And, I mean, if they can't find anything to cheer, they're going to start finding a way to boo. You know,
right. So here's Jake Bentley. So, you know, the face of the program essentially from the player side, and you know he took it like a man, and you got to give him a ton of credit for the way he, you know, speaks to the media when he's facing these difficult questions. But here's the Gamecock starting quarterback.
Jake, in the first half, when you had some rough moments with some missed passes and the interception, and the fans started booing, at that time, did that have more of a negative effect on you or a positive effect?
And that's life. I mean, that's really the way that I've always been brought up, is you can't worry about outside influences. You know, other people are going to try to come at you each and every way, but you just got to focus on what you believe in and surround yourself with great people. I mean, my teammates, every one of them came up to me just saying they have my back and you know, keep my head up and just get through it. And so I'd say the support from my teammates had the biggest impact. You know, obviously it's disappointing to hear that from the fans, but I mean, they just want to win too. And so do I. But yeah, having the support from my teammates and to see them rally for me and everything was great for me to see.
All right, Shane, I just the more I hear this guy, the more I become impressed with him, with his demeanor off the field. What were your thoughts on it, on his post-game comments here?
Kind of felt bad for him, man. I mean, you could tell he was about to cry, brother. And this is a quarterback, if you remember, down at Media Days, was as arrogant as they came. I mean, nothing was going to touch this South Carolina team. They were going to compete. They were going to beat Georgia. They were going to, you know, they were going to compete in the East and possibly make it to the SEC championship. And you talk about night and day, man. I mean, this kid's against the wall, and he's got a lot of pressure on him right now to produce. And maybe that's why he made a couple of bonehead plays, because he feels like if he messes up, there's another guy on the sideline that could step in and take his job.
Yeah, now South Carolina heads into a bye week with this taste in their mouth. I mean, this is, you know, sometimes Tennessee did lose heading into their bye. You know, it can happen where you get two weeks in and get some quality work in, but just the momentum is completely different here at South Carolina. This has got to be a tough spot for them going into this bye, knowing they let one slip away here.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, last thing on A&M, I think this is going to be a game that very few A&M and SEC fans look back on. And not to say it's very noteworthy particularly, but it's just the latest sign. It's very, very hard to win in the SEC on the road. And A&M just keeps, you know, they're not killing people, but they're just doing what they got to do to go on the road. This is the first of that three-game gauntlet. They go on a bye with this win. They got time to rest up before they go against Mississippi State and Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just very impressed by the just basically the culture Jimbo's got in there, and just his guys' willingness to buy in. And like you said, Kevin Sumlin could not get his guys to do that towards the end of the year. And obviously, we don't know how it's going to work out all the way for Jimbo, but his team's off to a good start there.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Shane, let's jump to Nashville, where Florida traveled to Vanderbilt, comes away with a 37-27 win. But this was a tough one here for the Commodores. They had control of this game. I believe it was 21-3 at one point. They were just stifling the Gators in the red zone. But the biggest story, obviously, was this huge brouhaha here. We almost had coaches going at it. What was your thought on this game and just that whole situation there?
Oh, speaking of dogfight, Mike. Oh, we had one, man. I was glued to this thing. I'm like, what the hell is going on down in Vandy? And, yeah, the coaches got into it. But, dude, Vanderbilt, I felt like Vanderbilt kind of blew this thing. I mean, they kind of got away from what was working. And at one point, they were up 21-3 late in the second quarter. I knew that this wasn't, you know, quote-unquote a trap game. But I was worried about Florida's offense coming out, you know, just from that huge victory last week. They can maybe have a letdown game. And Vanderbilt had an opportunity to, you know, to close this thing out, but they just couldn't do it. The Gators prevailed.
Yeah, and I think this is a good sign for Dan Mullen and his coaching staff. And just not necessarily, I don't think his team came out ready to play, but they responded to adversity on the road. Now, there was obviously a lot of Florida fans here. I'd say, but the crowd was probably more Florida than Vanderbilt fans. But still, it's tough to do. It was an early game, and you know, the team responded the right way. But that sideline incident was just ugly. I mean, you had coaches, you know, swearing at each other and about to throw down there, and you know, so I that was kind of the story for me. It's just kind of how can these players have their composure when the damn coaches don't. And a lot of what you're saying, I believe Vanderbilt was in control of this game, but I thought that was definitely a mistake by Derek Mason, kind of egging on. I don't know if you want to use that word, but just kind of getting involved with the Florida coaches, because I think that rose the intensity of the game on from everyone. And once you got the Gators kind of going, it was their game from there on out. And Vanderbilt, I don't think, stood a chance.
You know, it's crazy. I think that was the spark they needed. And ironically, Mason caused it. If he would have went over there, checked on his player, who gives a shit what the guys are saying on the sideline? Don't look up. Just talk to your player. Make sure he's okay. Get him back to the sideline. Because when that thing got engaged and there was flags out and the teams were clearing the benches, it seems like, because Florida was just barely getting through this game. And you saw it right after that, dude, they were on fire. And so I'm thinking Mason's little street fight caused this thing, man.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, though. We're just talking. If Mason and Dan actually got in a fight, Mason would win, right? Don't you think?
It depends on how fast Mullen can run in them damn Jordans, you know. That would be his only hope, would be to run away. But
he looks like an eye gouger, you know. Maybe he'd get him that way. He'd fight dirty.
Maybe a kick to the nuts or something.
Yeah, he just, don't he seem like one of those guys, you know, just like, he'll never see this coming.
Speaking of not seeing it coming, here was Derek Mason after the game. Dan Mullen he didn't want to go down the road. He wouldn't talk about it, which I thought was kind of stupid. But here's Derek Mason on just kind of what sparked that whole incident.
There was a lot of yelling there, Grantham and Mullen and all that on the sideline. How did that escalate? What happened there?
I talked to Dan at the end of that ball game. I mean, that was just a matter of, you know, obviously, you know, when players down and, you know, when their player from the sideline and says something, and you know, man, he directs it at me, and I say something back, and Dan gets mad, and you know, I mean, that's how it started. Obviously, at the end of the day, you know, we're just trying to make sure, man, that we can, you know, man, play the game the right way, keep the game safe, and make sure, man, that everybody walks out of this. It's the referee's job to referee the game, you know, not ours. And so when it's all said and done, obviously, man, you're just talking about, you know, and the coaches who are extremely competitive, but man, I got a lot of respect for Dan. You know, man, he respects the process, so do I, so we keep it moving.
I can say no regrets about getting emotional at that moment with one of your players down and all that.
No, I mean, what's the regret in being emotional? Football's an emotional game. You know, I mean, when it's all said and done, if you don't play football with emotion, like what are we doing? I think, you know, that's just part of the process, like in games. I mean, you see emotion from coaches all the time. That just happens to be one instance.
All right, Shane, so does that change any of your perspective on the whole deal there?
No, it just makes him look guilty. Mm-hmm. Like I said, he should have not engaged with the sideline. And who knows, man? I'm telling you, if this game would have just kind of just teeter-totted through the whole quarter to the whole half, this thing could have fell in Vanderbilt's way. But that little spark, man, if you were watching that game, which I was freaking glued to it after that, and it was like everything that Florida did just turned to gold.
Okay, Shane, final game from the weekend. This was the late-night game, but this was – just had a feeling this was going to be a hell of a game. It always is when these two meet. But Ole Miss goes into Little Rock, beats Arkansas 37-33. Man, just another devastating loss there for Chad Morris and his program.
Dude, he can't get out of the fourth quarter, can he?
No, and that was, I mean, that's kind of the deal here. You know, credit Ole Miss. It just seems like these situations keep happening to Arkansas where they can end the game. But what happens? They decide to punt. It looks like the right move. They punted it, pin Ole Miss down to the 3-yard line, and Ole Miss drove 97 yards for the game-winning touchdown. in front of a lot of people showed up there in Little Rock. The weather was shitty. It was, like I said, it was a night game. It was, had to have been probably a little cold. These people deserve better than that. But I mean, it's just kind of like the curse of Tennessee has jumped to Arkansas. And I think it's been that way for a while because Arkansas just can't seem to damn win a fourth quarter game.
No, no. And Arkansas, I thought, played really good defense against these receivers. And I thought that they had this thing licked. Going in the fourth quarter, I think they were up 11 points. And I was just like, and Ole Miss was not playing good. You just kind of had that feeling that Arkansas's got this thing in the bag. And then, honestly, I kind of drifted off from it. I was watching something else. And you sent me a text. You're like, get on ESPN. Or was it SEC? Yeah, get on SEC. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was the start of the 97-yard drive. I just had a feeling, just the way these series goes, it was gonna come back Ole Miss. And, you know, here's a little inside information for you here, Shane. So a lot of times what I have to do during these games on Saturdays, it's my responsibility to publish basically a game story, and these need to come out the moment the game ends. So, you know, it's easy when it's Alabama-Missouri because you can have that damn thing written by the third quarter because you know Alabama's just whooping ass.
Uh-huh.
I wrote it as Arkansas getting the first big SEC win of the Chad Morris era because that's the way it was going. You know, I wasn't trying to jinx them or anything, but they were in control of the game. Ole Miss wasn't doing anything. And then the last, like, 4 minutes of the game, Ole Miss scores two touchdowns to win it. So I had to rewrite the whole damn article there within the last 10 minutes. But I just knew as soon as they got the ball, the way they were moving – Jordan Tayamu had a career day. I mean, he killed it. He had 528 yards of total offense, second most in program history behind only the great Archie Manning. So here's Matt Luke on Jordan Tayamu. And you remember, you may have missed last year's game, but similar situation. Ole Miss was in control of the game. Tayamu had a big game here against Arkansas, but he had a late fumble that really Arkansas got the ball. They had one final scoring drive to win the game. So this is probably one that's been weighing on Tayamu's mind for a year, and that's something that Matt Luke admitted on Saturday.
But, you know, just tell Jordan, I mean, just to go manage the game, get them playing great, making good decisions, really good with his feet tonight. We knew as much man coverage as they played that we'd be having a good matchup with him running the football, and that was effective for us. But I'm just proud of him and really proud of the O-line. Arkansas has a very, very good defensive front, and for them to hold up the way they did in pass protection is really special. You know, kind of last year, it kind of haunted him with the strip at the Arkansas game last year. So it was kind of, a special for him to be able to make a play, break a tackle, go score a touchdown to really spark us. And I think that play changed the game.
All right, Shane, so Tayamu came through this time after, you know, letting his team down last year. How impressed were you by his performance?
Oh, man, very. You know, when I was watching this game, it seems like he was freaking running every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, it kind of looked like Fitzgerald with the Auburn game last week. You know, it's just, I think he had like 20 carries or something like that. But like you said, you talk about a man that just he took control of this game. Over 500 yards total offense. He was very efficient on offense as passing. I think he was 26 to 35, but his rushing over 140 yards. That's just freaking impressive. The guy literally took care of that game himself. I mean, because Metcalf, Brown, Lodge, you know, his NWOs. I think Lodge is the only one that had a decent game, but I mean, his longest reception was 12 yards. He was just – he spread the ball out when he needed to. He ran it when he needed to. And, man, it's just an overall impressive win for Jordan and Ole Miss Land Sharks. I keep wanting to call them Rebels.
And then on the flip side, God, like you just said, this is gut-wrenching. Arkansas gave up 611 yards of total offense. That's inexcusable. But, you know, the thing that really killed the Hogs here is the injuries. Ty's story – got knocked out of the game, never returned. For some damn reason, a guy that's kind of been battered all year, they decided to throw him a damn ball on a trick reverse play, and he just got leveled. He never got up off the ground until, you know, training staff came out there. Rakeem Boyd, the running back from Last Chance U, he just looks better and better each game. He had 109 yards and only 7 touches. He looked like he was on his way to a huge game. Then he gets hurt, so he's out. Devall Whaley, you know, he's been their lead back all year outside of the concussion games. He gets hurt. I mean, Arkansas just, like I said, it's almost like they're not meant to win a damn SEC game this year, because this looked like one that was going to give them a ton of momentum moving forward. They got Tulsa and Vanderbilt in back-to-back weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then here again, the damn fourth quarter strikes again. So here's Chad Morris after this one, kind of on what the hell they can do to break this damn curse.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Bob, the biggest thing we got to do is we'll continue to go back to work. And as I shared with the players in there, you know, it's not going to change. Our formula is not going to change. We're going to keep getting back in there. We're going to keep getting back to work and getting better. We've got to win plays. And that was my message the whole second at halftime, was that I could care less what the score is. It's about winning plays. We need to win more plays in the second half than they do, and then we'll like the outcome. And so that's our message. We got to play one play at a time. And you can't let that one play affect the next play. And so regardless what the score is.
Chad Morris, to me, he didn't sound like a guy that was, like, broken by any means. You know, he's a guy's full of energy, full of positivity. But, you know, what is your takeaway from his comments there?
Yeah, I'm with you. It's just, I don't know. It just feels like a guy that was dealt the wrong hand over and over again. The fourth quarter losses, the injuries. I mean, it just seems like just when they take a step forward, something happens and they fall two steps back, you know? It's just, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just kind of what I feel. I don't want to say he felt defeated, but, you know, I think he's been beat up so much, like, nothing else can hurt him, you know?
Right, and they don't get that bye week until they play Tulsa and Vanderbilt. I think this would have been the perfect time to get it. You don't always get that bye week when you want it, but this is a Razorback team, I think, that's kind of battered and broken, and they need some time off, and they don't get it because they go right back to this is, you know, back to Tulsa, where this is a game. This is, when we said must win for last week for Ole Miss, this is a must win for Arkansas just to get things going in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane, this is normally when we do our, you know, we guess the opening lines, and there are a couple lines out, but we're actually going to save that for the next episode. And the reason being because Tua, we don't know his status. We don't know Ty Story's status for Arkansas. And what that means is, they do not release opening lines until they know the status of quarterback. So we only got six games to run down here. Two of them don't have a line, so it doesn't seem like it's worth doing at the moment. But, you know, you got any closing thoughts here, either just on the weekend that just happened or the weekend yet ahead here in the SEC?
Well, Mike, I'd like to say that this is the greatest weekend I've had this year. It's been pretty nice, but I tell you what, man, there's been great games, it seems like, every Saturday. I don't remember an SEC, I just don't remember games being like this. Every week there's an upset, or every week there's just a smash mouth football game that you just really enjoy, and I'm having a blast, brother. I'm enjoying the ride. I don't know about you.
Oh yeah, for sure. But before we jump off here, I did want to mention a quick note here. You know, there was some talk a week or so ago, SEC East better than the SEC West. How about this crazy stat? Every team in the SEC East is on a losing streak currently, outside of Florida and Tennessee. Isn't that pretty mind-blowing?
That is crazy, man. It's like the late 90s again.
And the only two in the West that are on a losing streak, Auburn and Arkansas, everybody in the West is on a winning streak. So it's just a wild time here. We kind of got, you know, three teams at the East: Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, all with one SEC loss. Kentucky's got three wins in the SEC. Florida and Georgia, four wins. So they're both on a bye. But things are getting muddled in the East. In the West, you got Alabama at 4-0, A&M at 3-1, LSU at 3-1, and everyone else fighting for 1-2, 1-3, and 0-4 records. These division races are really starting to heat up, and it looks like it's basically down to LSU and Alabama in the West, and those mm-hmm. three teams I mentioned in the East, Florida, Georgia, and Kentucky. I think things are going to get really interesting here at the tail end of October.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how they just kind of keep seesawing back. You know, there for a while, the West was struggling, you know, with Mississippi State and Auburn, and now it's kind of like flip pages, so it goes back and forth. So I don't know, makes for an interesting story, brother.
All right, Shane, thank you for joining me as always. And thank you to the listeners. We really appreciate all of you. We've been setting new records every episode for, you know, most downloads, most listens and everything. So we really appreciate that. You can check us out on Reddit at That SEC Podcast. And if you made it this far, if you wouldn't mind just going a step further and giving us a rating and a review on iTunes, that really helps us out.
Yeah, buddy. Go Vols.
You know, one guy we have not yet referenced, we got to give this guy a ton of praise, is Jarrett Garantano, 21 of 32 for 328 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. First time in his career he's had over 328 yards. I saw a stat where he had yet to hit 178, I think, or more this year, and he had over 180 yards just on third downs. I mean, he was incredible in this one.
Mike, I don't think you listen to me when I talk.
Oh, did you talk about him?
I the exact same stats. I was like, that son of a bitch ain't even paying attention to me. Thank God we ain't live.